This podcast is a part of Sphera,
a collective of independent media outlets from across Europe.
For more information,
visit sphera-hub.com.
Joyeux Noël, everyone!
Fijne feestdagen!
Weshalbig spjant!
Feliz Navidad!
As you will have deduced, everyone, it's not just me and Dominic this week. It being the last episode of the year, we thought we'd throw a little Christmas party.
Yes, we thought it'd be nice to have a festive episode and invite our two producers onto the show to come and share some Christmassy stories from across Europe. Welcome, Katz and Wojciech. Nice you could join us.
Hello!
Thanks for having us.
I hope you've all got some festive snacks with you.
Yes, you were ordered to bring festive snacks. There's no fun like forced fun. What have you brought?
Okay, so I did the age-old Dutch tradition of buying a whole bunch of chocolate letters in the second week of December because we've just had Sinterklaas. So that's actually the chocolate letter moment. So now they're really, really cheap. So it's actually not a Christmas snack, but you can get hundreds of them.
What is with the chocolate letters thing? Like, why do you have them?
I don't actually know what the story is behind them. They start appearing in like November and then you give them to the people that you care about.
Is it supposed to be the letter of their name?
Yeah, it's supposed to be the letter of your name. And then I just have a lot of S's because those were the ones on offer. But it's really nice because it's kind of easy and then you can still make someone feel so special. Like there's such a primal joy in being like a chocolate letter with my name on it.
You should have bought enough to spell out the Europeans. I can't believe you haven't.
It's true.
Wojciech, what have you got for us?
So I realized that most of the traditional Polish snacks for Christmas are pretty hard to like prepare. So the only thing I could come up with like really easily and quickly was dried fruit compote. Mm. It's something I really like. I think you'll just hate it because it's basically dried and smoked fruits that are like boiled all together, like pears and plums and whatnot. And it has a very, very specific, like very peculiar taste. And we drink it only once a year, which makes it even more special.
Oh, you drink it? I thought you were just like spooning it into your mouth.
No, no. You just prepare like a huge, huge bowl of that. And then you just have a glass, just like mulled wine or something. You serve it either hot or cold. Like it depends on what you prefer. I prefer it cold. And it's really actually good. And like my wife hates it. I know people who just can't have it. And I really love it.
Is it alcoholic? Are you drinking in the morning?
No, no, no. It's a soft drink. Your kids can drink it. It's very good. Yeah. It's said to be very good for your digestion. So like, you know, if you just eat too much, then you can have this and it's supposed to help you.
For your next round of Christmas food.
Yeah. It's kind of gross that you do that.
Somewhat disturbing.
Yeah.
I love that. So practical.
I also think it's like really typical of a Christmas snack or drink for it to be divisive. Mm. I feel like that might be a distinctive characteristic of seasonal snacks that like some people hate it and some people love it, like Brussels sprouts in the UK.
Mince pies in the UK. I bring them to my French colleagues every year. And every year they look at them like I've just presented them with a turd. It's really sad.
Really?
Dominic, what have you got?
I'm munching on another Dutch Christmassy snack. Well, it's a festive snack, not really Christmassy. Krautnoten, which are sometimes mistakenly called pepernoten. Katz, did you know that they're not actually called pepernoten?
No!
Apparently, pepernoten is something different. Anyway, that's according to Wikipedia. Anyway, they're these small coin-sized cookies made out of this Dutch spiced caramelized biscuit mix called speculaas. They're sweet and hard and crunchy, and you can taste the nutmeg, the cinnamon, the ginger, and the cloves. Mm. So it's a really Christmassy, classically Christmassy flavor, but they are actually more commonly eaten at the Sinterklaas festival that happened earlier in the month, which is at the beginning of December. But you do kind of see them hanging around at Christmas as well.
I like that you can just grab like a big fistful of them because they're small enough to justify that.
Yeah, and they're really just like in bowls everywhere. Like you just walk around and it's just like fistfuls of speculaas everywhere or of krautnoten.
I recently did a school performance of this opera I'm doing and the kids were throwing them at us. Ooh, during the performance.
They're quite hard.
They are, yeah. It was quite brutal. I did get apology letters from seven of the children, which was quite sweet and entertaining. What are you enjoying, Katie?
I've got some pepillot, which are like little chocolates. I wanted to bring some oysters, but I thought it would be a bit messy. Not good for a podcast. So these are little chocolates that you have around Christmas. And I've got little riddles and jokes on the wrappers. But what I really like about them is they explain the jokes, which kind of ruins them. It's like, here's the joke, and this is why it's a pun. Do you get it? It's like, guys.
What does this one say?
This one's a sort of Anglophone one. Monsieur et Madame Ma ont deux enfants. Mr. and Mrs. Mass have two children. What are their names? And then it says, Mary and Chris.
Chris.
In brackets, Merry Christmas. So now you understand. Good joke. Anyway, should we get on with this week's show?
Yes. It's time for Good Week, Bad Week.
Full disclosure, we are recording this Christmassy episode a little bit early. So this week's Good Week, Bad Week stories are not actually from this week. They're more things that we spotted recently and wanted to talk about. But time moves differently at this time of year. Like, nobody cares about weeks anymore.
We should call it Good Year, Bad Year.
Oh, this is a missed opportunity to do a full year roundup. Never mind. Who's had a good week, Dominic?
Well, I'm stubbornly sticking with animals this week after last week's animal extravaganza, because it's a good week for elephants in France after a Belgian couple opened up Europe's first retirement home for elephants.
Sweet. That is adorable. Are they retiring from circuses? Like, where are they retiring from?
Mainly, it was started to accommodate retirement from circuses, but elephants also sometimes need to retire from zoos, so they will also be welcomed. Retirement from circuses is happening more and more for European elephants because most EU countries now have some sort of national legislation that restricts or bans the use of animals in circus performances. And France, where this retirement home is situated, is currently in the process of phasing out all wild animals from use in circuses. The French Parliament actually just voted on legislation last month that will prohibit these performances. It was part of a bigger animal rights bill, which also banned mink farming and brought in tighter restrictions around the sale of pets.
I've got my mouth full of chocolate, but who are the first residents of this old people's home? Old elephant's home?
Well, there's only one resident so far. She's a 52-year-old Asian elephant called Gandhi, and it's thought that she was born in the wild in Thailand in the 1970s and brought to Denmark at a pretty young age, eventually ending up in a zoo in northwest France. According to the video I watched on Euronews, it seems pretty amazingly designed with the elephant's comfort as the priority. The total area covers 29 hectares, and there are inside and outside options for Gandhi. Inside is heated at a comfortable 18 degrees, thanks to a wood stove powered by heat pumps. And apparently Gandhi is settling in well.
Okay, so how many elephants fit in this pension home?
There's currently space for 3 females, but there are plans to expand it to 7. The owners believe that there are about 100 elephants still performing in circuses across Europe. So more homes like this may be necessary to find homes for them as these national bans come in or as the elephants reach retirement age.
Why is it only ladies?
Ladies.
Yeah, I actually can't work that out. I think... I don't know whether they live longer or whether they take up less space. Lady elephants.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from. In Dutch, you often call animals like vrouwtje hond or mannetje hond, which is really weird. You say like the lady dog. It's really weird.
We did make an episode about Slovenian lady bears a long time ago, I seem to remember. And Dominic mocked me for it then. I think it's good. I think we should bring this terminology back.
It also sounds quite fun to be just like a bunch of old lady elephants hanging out in an 18-degree wood stove heated house.
And how long do they live usually?
Well, elephants can live up until 60 or 70 years old, depending on what type of elephant they are. But the owners of the retirement home therefore hope that Gandhi will have another 20 years to comfortably enjoy her final home. So, good week for elephants in France.
May I ask you one more question?
Yes.
Will they be accepting humans in the future?
Yay!
Yeah, I have to say, I did look at it thinking, and as a performer myself, I empathize with these elephants. And I thought, oh, I wish there was a place for opera singers like this.
Yeah, I need to find a place because the Polish pension system is supposed to be so broke that I'll never get any money when I'm old. So maybe, you know, this is a good shelter for me.
Can I come too? I'm a millennial freelancer.
Yeah, and I'm a freelancer too, so I'm really doomed.
I'm just looking at the Elephant Old People's Home, and it's in a part of France, which is very nice. It's in like Nouvelle-Aquitaine in the west, which is where a lot of humans retire to. So I think it's a good choice.
The mayor of the town says that like he was pretty surprised when he saw the planning application come through, but like the locals are coming to terms with it and quite like it. They've got like big plans in place just in case one of the elephants escape.
That's good.
Who's had a bad week, Katie?
This week's bad week was provided by husband of the show, Thomas Lammers. And I am sorry to tell you all that it relates to one of our favorite initiatives, the European Tree of the Year. Kat, I know you're a big fan of this competition.
Kat has already been set off. You know what's coming, don't you?
You haven't even heard the story yet.
I read the letter. It's hilarious.
Okay, so just to fill you in case you haven't heard of the European Tree of the Year, it is a lovely initiative. Every year, each country gets to nominate just a really nice tree. It's like a beauty pageant, but for European trees. And like either it can be nominated just because it's a really pretty tree or because it has a nice story. Sometimes they're hundreds of years old and they've got like local myths attached to them. Some of them are just kind of funny, like the Portuguese entry from last year. It just says here, like, this is thought to be one of the widest trees in Portugal, which I think is great. But it's also thought to have been planted by the Romans. It was incredibly old. Anyway, if you are stressed out, then the European Tree of the Year website is a really nice place to hang out. And it also has this really relaxing video of all of this year's candidates, which I think would be really nice to go to sleep to.
Overlooking the Tyrrhenian Sea, it juts out over a small stream. From the height of its majesty, this guardian seems to lovingly watch over the forest.
However, Thomas recently spotted a much more serious post on this lovely website. There doesn't seem to be a date on it, so we can't work out when exactly this news broke. But this is what it says. This is translated from Czech, by the way, so apologies for any clumsiness in the translation. Dear participants of the European Tree of the Year, voters and supporters of the trees, this is not a very pleasant matter. It's rather negative and could even jeopardise the integrity and honesty of our competition. We have met with attempts to disrupt the fairness of the competition and influence the results in favour of one of the competitors in this year's European Tree of the Year competition. Some of the supporters, in inverted commas, of this candidate decided to help, also in inverted commas, their favourite finalist by creating an artificially large number of fraudulent votes. We have identified more than 30,000 such votes and removed them all. Can you guys believe this? There's like fraud in the nicest competition in Europe.
No.
Also, they really don't usually get that many voters, do they?
Well, there's like tens of thousands.
Like 30,000 is quite remarkable on the...
Yeah, well, I think that's why they noticed that something was going amiss.
I mean, it's unclear which tree the fraud was in favour of. I'm guessing it probably wasn't the winning tree, which was a 1,000-year-old oak from Lecina in Spain. But it is just shocking, frankly, that anyone would want to besmirch this competition. The organisers said that fortunately their security systems were able to identify the fraud and eliminate the risk of it affecting the results. But they were very stern in this statement on their website. I know it's not funny. Obviously, electoral fraud is not funny. But they said, one thing must be clear. This competition is not only about winning a prestigious title. It is about recognising the importance of trees for us as humanity. So come on, guys. Like, whoever you are, as we know, victory doesn't taste as sweet if it's stolen.
That's really bad.
It's terrible.
I think I'm going to pitch this story to Darknet Diaries.
Yes.
Save up for your pension with the elephant.
They could totally get to the bottom of this.
I genuinely think it could be an amazing episode. We are, as ever, very, very grateful to our wonderful little elves who support us on Patreon.
It's very dismissive.
Don't unsubscribe because I refer to you as elves. You can join this club of supporters and keep this podcast going and keep us all happy this Christmas if you head to patreon.com/Europeans podcast. We've got some new supporters to thank this week. Who are they, Katie?
They are Aris and Sarah Smith. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you all.
As you would have noticed from the extra two voices you can hear this week, for a little while now, it's not just been me and Dominic making this podcast. Our little team has been growing, which is amazing. But it does mean that more than ever, we really, really need your help to keep putting this podcast into your ears every week. So if you feel a little festive generosity coming over to you and you want to support this podcast, you can give as little as $2 a month in various currencies.
Yes, please.
Dominic, I think you should enter your own Christmas tree into the European Tree of the Year Awards because it's absolutely massive. It's given me an inferiority complex.
It is enormous. My husband, if he's going to do something, he does it like absolutely, completely and decides to get the biggest one we could possibly get. And I do not want to know how much it cost. It's one of those things I come back and I'm like, oh, that's nice. We can't really afford that.
Wojciech, am I right in thinking that people put spiders' webs in Christmas trees in Poland?
No.
Oh. I read that on the internet.
No, that's not true. Oh. It looks like a spider's web, but actually what it's supposed to be, it's supposed to symbolize, I think, the hair of an angel. Because that's how it's called. Mm. Yeah, I think it looks really bad. I never liked it, but that's what people do.
Is it just like cottony fluff?
I'm not sure what's that. I haven't seen it for some years now, but I remember my sister being really obsessed about it. And like she loved putting loads and loads of that onto the tree. But I really don't know. I think it's just made of plastic. Maybe. I really don't know.
My grandma used to have real candles in her tree and it always made me so scared that there was going to be a fire.
That's really stressful.
My neighbors in England did that too. It was so exciting. I loved it.
Kat Slazlo, you grew up mostly in Barcelona and I believe in Catalonia, there's a quite weird Christmas tradition that I feel like everyone should know about.
They really should. So around the beginning of December, you start seeing on markets these logs, like many different sizes of log. It's a hollow log and it's got little legs and a face and a little red hat. And it's called the cacatillo, which means shitting uncle or like shitting guy. And so what you do is you buy one of these logs and then the main thing you put in there is turrón, which is like this sort of candy. It's like nougat and chocolate and stuff. And then you put it in the log or under the log, depending on how hollow your log is. And then the children come around at Christmas and they smack the log with sticks. And then you sing this song about like, you know, this log shitting out presents, and then the presents are shat out. So we do that instead of Christmas trees. It's amazing.
That sounds really wonderfully strange.
Yeah, it's really enjoyable.
Fantastic.
And in the song, I can't remember exactly how the song goes, but there's something like, please don't shit out fish. Please shit out candy. It's really like very strange.
Sorry to bring in like a vulgar American reference, but it reminds me of, you know, from South Park, Mr. Hanky, the Christmas poo.
I didn't watch South Park.
No?
No.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. It sounds like a combination of Mr. Hanky and Piñata.
Yes, which is a fantastic combination.
Yeah, it has actually got Piñata vibes.
Speaking of Spain, over there in the Netherlands, doesn't Santa like come from Spain?
Well, yes and no, because he's not Santa. He's actually a different character, Sinterklaas, who is also kind of based on the route of St. Nicholas, as Santa is. And there's some argument that like Santa, our Western Santa, is based on Sinterklaas. Although, yeah, I also dove into this week and discovered that Father Christmas actually existed before both of them.
Really?
But without diving too deep into that for now, yeah, Sinterklaas is the big tradition in December in the Netherlands that takes place and is more important than Christmas, really. And it happens on the eve of St. Nicholas, so that's December the 5th. And on that evening, kids get loads of presents. I just had to knock on my neighbor's door and pretend to be Sinterklaas and then run away and leave a sack outside their door.
Cute.
It was really, really
oh
cute.
Oh my God, that's so sweet.
And Sinterklaas, yeah, arrives on a steamboat from Spain with his assistant or assistants, Pete, who up until recently were called Zwarte Piet or Black Pete, mm-hmm. and were portrayed in the Netherlands by wearing blackface. The blackface element is thankfully starting to fade a bit, especially in big cities like Amsterdam, where I live. You don't see many people with full-on blackface. Now they have like soot face, so like little black patches as if they came down the chimney. But yeah, it's, as we've talked about before on the show, it's quite a divisive tradition. There's a strong segment of the population who are like digging their heels in and saying, this blackface tradition needs to stay. It's otherwise Sinterklaas is ruined.
It's really, really outrageous. I think in Brabant this year in the south, they did like an almost exactly blackface and it was just like slightly mixed with a bit of white paint. And then they were like, no, it's grayface. And you're just like, oh my God, I can't believe we're having this conversation. It's completely insane.
Yeah. Although I was speaking to my Belgian friend this week who said, oh, the conversation in the Netherlands is like 10 years ahead of that in Belgium. Like it's not really happening yet.
Oh,
I mean, it is happening a bit, but they're even further behind. Mm. So that's a shame. But it does seem to be, since I've been here, I feel like the Dutch people I know have become much more aware of what was wrong with this blackface element. At the worst point in the kind of a few decades ago, they weren't only in blackface, but they had big racist hoop earrings and big red lips as well. So
I will say this really is still happening now. Like, in Volendam, for example, last weekend, there was a really big protest. Like, it's not gone.
No, it's not gone. Definitely not. But I definitely think it's slowly improving. Although, as I said, yes, some people are digging their heels in and making it central to their identity in backing up. But what I wanted to say is that because of this tradition that happens at the beginning of December, I'm sometimes a bit disappointed that, like, Christmas doesn't really happen in the same way here in the Netherlands. I actually have to go to work on Christmas Day on the 25th to perform an opera, which is so strange because growing up in the UK, everything stops on the 25th. And it's one of the things I love is that even trains and buses and shops are closed. So you've got this feeling on this day that like everything feels completely different. The possibilities of life are just turned upside down. And I miss that a bit when I'm here and have to go to work.
I have to say, I didn't realize quite how obsessed Brits were with Christmas. I thought our level of obsession was quite normal until I left the country and realized that, oh no, people aren't that into it other places. And you've really noticed that, I think, this year from like the coverage of, I'm sorry to bring the B word into it briefly, but this obsession since like September with the idea that we might not have enough butchers to provide all the turkeys this year because the Brexit has meant all the immigrants have left. And it's just been this like nationwide obsession. Like, will we have the turkeys ready for Christmas?
How's Christmas in Poland, Wojciech?
It's really huge. I think it must be similar to UK. Like everything stops. And then there is so much customs and traditions that every Christmas looks like a sort of a deja vu. You just go from one point of the schedule to another. And then like, you know, you're just suddenly in a New Year's Eve. It lasts like even longer than like 2 or 3 days because we celebrate on the Christmas Eve. Then you've got like what we call the first day of Christmas and the second day of Christmas. And then actually nobody works between the 26th of December and the end of the year. Or like people pretend to work.
That's great.
Yeah, it's great actually.
And then are you just like touring your friends, like slowly extending the family? Or?
Yeah, you just sort of, you know, lock at home, have mulled wine and just talk with friends and family actually. It's a very family holiday. It's I think the most like family oriented thing that we have in Poland, which is kind of nice. Yeah, but I wanted to tell you about something really weird. And first, I wanted to ask you a question. Like, if you were to name one film that everybody watches on Christmas, is it something like that?
Ooh.
Where you're at?
In the UK, a lot of people watch this kids' cartoon called The Snowman.
Sounds appropriate.
Dominic, maybe you'll give us a few bars of the famous song.
It's so intense. Please sing it.
Very high pitched.
It was one of the first things I sung as a child in concert.
Go for it.
I'm embarrassed now. We're walking in the air. That one.
Beautiful.
I always loved the moment when the drum kit came in behind me and I was performing it. I felt like I was...
Oh, this is a rock version.
Yeah, there is a drum kit in it. Anyway, yeah, I think It's a Wonderful Life is also something that people watch.
Oh, yeah.
Although I've never watched it.
I feel like Chitty Chitty Bang Bang always shows up as well.
Love Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
I don't.
The Child Catcher is so scary.
I usually go for Singing in the Rain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just a classic. It's a good film. What is it in Poland? Is there like one film that everyone watches?
Yeah, it's funny. If you were Polish, you would just immediately say Home Alone.
Mm.
Sort of not a very sophisticated TV film by Chris Columbus. starring Macaulay Culkin, who seemed to have been like the cutest child ever. And I think that's like part of the success of the film.
So cute.
Then for the last 20 years, they've been airing this every Christmas. And it's like a real, like a full-on tradition. It's like next to going to church and like having a tree and giving presents and, you know, like the 12 dishes, which is like, you know, a staple for Polish Christmas traditions. And you can only watch it on TV. If you like stream it or you just have a DVD, like that's just not going to work. It's like a spell.
It's cheating.
Yeah, you just can't cheat. It has to be on the TV. But in 2010, it's always one channel that owns rights to like air it during the Christmas time. And the channel that was owning the rights, they just decided not to do that. And there were massive protests. Like people actually took to internet. Like they started like a Facebook group in defense of, you know, this being kept in the schedule. Obviously they won. That was like sort of, you know, reinstated into the schedule. Like they put it again into the schedule. And it was the biggest hit. Poland is the country of like roughly 38 million. More than 4 million people gather in front of the TV and watch it, which is really a lot.
Whoa.
It is a Christmassy movie, isn't it? Like it is set around Christmas.
Mildly, I'd say. Yeah. But it's not about Christmas. It's like, you know, it's a slapstick comedy. It just happens around Christmas.
There are variants of this around Europe, right? Like I think in Sweden, everyone watches Donald Duck.
Really? And in Germany at New Year, everyone watches this silent British old movie from like the 1970s or 60s.
60s, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, my German colleague made me watch it recently and I didn't really get it.
Oh.
I may be half German, but yeah, it doesn't extend to this film.
Oh yeah, I've heard about that. What is the film?
It's called Dinner for One and like no one in the UK has heard of it. It's very strange.
Weird.
Last chance to get in your isolation inspirations for 2021. What have you all been watching or reading or otherwise consuming that's worth sharing with our listeners?
This week I watched a really, really funny Icelandic film. The main character is like this woman in her 40s, I think, and she's just like teaches a choir, very normal life, and then it's set just about in the future, I think. And she's also secretly an eco-terrorist. So she just keeps on cutting the electricity cables because she's angry about climate change. And it is so funny. And it's really weird. Like one of the weird things, and you'll see this like right from the beginning, is that the band that's playing the soundtrack, like the music, is just always in the background.
Mm.
Like you see them playing and then they don't interact, but you're just like, what is the band doing on this like Icelandic plane of Mars? And it's just, it's so enjoyable. It's really, really, really good.
That's so cool. I want to see that.
Me too. It sounds very theatrical.
Yay.
Yeah, me too. And it's really funny because my inspiration also comes from Iceland. There is this guy who's called Valgir Sigurdsson. I probably butchered his name, sorry. He's a composer and I think that his music falls into the category of contemporary classical music, which people usually associate with like, you know, some very weird sounds that are not very pleasant to listen to. But Valgir creates some really beautiful music that I think can be great accompaniment to your Christmas time. There's one album I really love, and it's an album from a few years back. It's called Traumalandit. And the first song, there's one song and the rest of that is just instrumental music, but the song is actually about those little dwarfs that do like little stupid tricks on people in Iceland during Christmas time. And it's really, it's one of the most beautiful songs that I've heard in my life. So yeah, that's my recommendation.
Cool. Nice tip. I mean, I just don't understand how it seems like at least half of Iceland are successful musicians.
Yeah.
What are they doing right? What have you been enjoying, Katie?
Well, it's not specifically Christmassy, but it is about unplugging from technology, which is something that lots of us are hoping to do over the holidays, I guess. I've been enjoying The Way Home by the Irish writer Mark Boyle. It's a book from a couple of years ago that I've got on audiobook. And it is about Mark's decision back in 2016 to radically cut himself off from modern technology, partly for environmental reasons, like Katz's eco-terrorist women, partly because he just fundamentally believed that like smartphones, etc., are bad for society. So he built himself a little hut in County Galway in the west of Ireland, and he made a decision to live with no electricity, no internet. The book itself was written on paper by candlelight. And yeah, I don't think I've ever read such a detailed account of someone deciding to live like that. I mean, you three are like some of the most responsive people I know on WhatsApp. Do you think you could live like this?
Oh, that's such a shameful thing.
What a thing to say.
Yeah, to say. I feel so embarrassed.
It's a compliment.
I think when I first started working with you guys, I didn't have a smartphone all the time.
I remember.
Like I had a smartphone that I would leave at home and then I would just use like an old Nokia-like phone. I've gone through phases of that and I really like it.
The thing I quite like about this book is that he doesn't pretend that what he's doing is for everyone, and he doesn't pretend that there aren't times when he's hypocritical, you know, because like, you know, living without technology, like what does that mean? Does that mean that you can't live without even super basic things that humans have invented?
Like matches for your candle.
For example. I mean, he doesn't. He actually makes all of his fire with like flint. And wow. There's this really nice moment in the book where he describes like the magic of making that for the first time. And it does sound really like primal. But there's like one point where he's like, I haven't spoken to my parents for 3 months. Like, this is so hard. And I'm just like, go and borrow your neighbor's phone and like call your mother. This is having consequences for other people, this super strict lifestyle of yours. It doesn't seem to be like that necessary. So there are points where he comes across as like, I guess, really just like a crotchety old man, like railing against technology. But I also found it like quite a beautiful and thought-provoking book. So I would recommend it. Dominic, what have you been reading or watching?
Well, my recommendation is also not very seasonal, but it's also something that could be enjoyed without an electronic device. I started diving into the latest edition of Are We Europe's magazine this week, the disinformation issue.
Oh, yeah. Mine just turned up.
Yeah, it's full of really fascinating European stories looking at the offline consequences of online lies. So there are stories like there's one about someone who falls in love with a person who then turns out to be a conspiracy theorist and grappling with that. There's a really interesting piece also from a Ukrainian man who spends his days hunting online trolls. And I particularly enjoyed a piece by the Spanish journalist Tess Mostoles about how to talk to a loved one who's turned into a conspiracy theorist. And here's a Christmas link, because I'm sure some of you will be heading home for the holidays to see some family members or friends who might have some views that they have developed attachments to that are on the border of conspiracy theories. And I know that's something that people really struggle with knowing how to deal with. So I really recommend you read this piece before heading into that situation. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas.
To finish off the year, I'm taking you all to Chester Zoo, a zoo near the border of England and Wales, where a team of experts have successfully bred two species of teeny tiny land snail, both of which were thought to have been extinct for 100 years until they were found on one of the Desertus Islands just off the coast of Madeira. That in itself was amazing news that they were found about 10 years ago, but it became clear over the last 10 years that this small escargotois of snails, yes, that is the collective noun of snails, apparently.
Love that. French inspired.
Yeah, this small escargotois of snails were in decline on the island. So a Portuguese-British collaboration was set up and about 60 of them were sent to the UK for a breeding program in captivity. And last week we got the amazing news that the specialists of Chester Zoo and the Bristol Zoological Society have successfully bred these tiny, tiny snails in captivity for the first time. There are now about 1,200 of them in Chester, and they are so cute. When they're born, they're about 1 millimeter long, which in the press release has been illustrated with photos of a baby snail on a 5p coin. And you see that the snail is just as big as the Queen's nose.
No!
Anyway, sorry for talking about animals again. I've become obsessed with Euronews' green page, and they have amazing stories like this about animals across Europe. So I promise to limit my animal stories when we're back after the break. I think I'm just feeling magnetically attached to animal stories while there are so many other bleak things happening in the world.
That is it for 2021. And I, for one, will be glad to see the back of this rubbish year. If you will excuse my soppiness, making this podcast was probably the highlight of it, to be honest, because the rest of it sucked, frankly. So a big thank you to my amazing colleagues for getting me through it and spending so much of this horrible year with me. Katz and Wojciech, Mick and Priyanka and Andre and everyone at Are We Europe. And of course, where would I be without my wonderful co-host, Dominic Kramer?
No.
Thank you. That's really sweet, Katie. I wasn't prepared for a nice, like, emotional roundup of the year, but thank you all for listening as well. We wouldn't be doing this if you weren't still tuning in. We really, really appreciate it, and especially to our Patreon supporters. We hope you all have a very nice holiday despite everything that's going on. So happy Christmas, happy Hanukkah, feine Feestdagen.
Wesołych Świąt.
Bon Nadal.
And joyous fêtes. We will be back on January 20th. Until then, whether you are spending the holidays dressed up as a Krampus in Austria or sweating it out in a sauna in Finland, have a great rest of the year and we'll see you in 2022.